Mercy Spirituality Center presents Muffin Talk with Beate.
Kia ora and welcome to Muffin Talk. Muffin Talk is brought to you by the Mercy Spirituality Center in Ipsum. We're a center for retreats, spiritual guidance, Christian meditation, and personal development. Once a week, I invite a guest to join me for a conversation about our center, our programs, social justice, different cultures, or the Bible. Today, I have invited Brother Kieran Finn to a Zoom recording for our broadcast. Brother Kieran, a very warm welcome and hi to my radio program.
Kia ora, Beate.
Brother Kieran Finn is a Champagnat brother and Bible scholar. He's originally from Gisborne and has spent many years in adult education, teaching scripture in New Zealand and abroad. With today's interview, we are continuing our first virtual teaching series organized by the Mercy Spirituality Center. We will have in total 8 topics on the women in the Bible. All sessions are connected, but also stand alone. On Muffin Talk today and our virtual Muffin Meeting next Wednesday, the 17th of June, we'll talk about the women in Luke. Brother Kieran, the women in Luke, is there anything that is special that sticks out with the women in Luke?
Well, one obvious one is how many sort of stories there are about women. Because when Luke tells a story about a man, tells a story about a woman. And their agenda appears that keep coming through. If you get the account, you get the name of a man or a story about a man or a mention, then you get the story, the mention, the name of a woman. Although it's pretty rare they get named. But the agenda appears like Zechariah and Elizabeth. And then you have Jesus referring to Naaman, the Syrian, being healed, and the widow of Zarephath. Then you have, if someone is called the son of Abraham, then you meet a daughter of Abraham. And of course, if you have a man with 100 sheep, then you have a woman with 10 coins. And my personal favorite is that little reference about the end times, that the men will be found, well, the translation, they're either in bed or they're at table, and the women are busy working at the mill. So all these pairs are there.
Sounds quite equal.
Well, that was the interpretation for a long, long time, and it was seen as the gospel of women. But then we had a period called the hermeneutic of suspicion. What is going on? Is there something, an agenda there? And in 1992, the Women's Bible Commentary, there was the writer on the Women of Luke, Jane Sharberg. She brought out this ambiguity and said there are many stories of women not found elsewhere. But then the question is, do they enhance or promote women? Are they subordinated to men, e.g. sitting at the feet of Jesus and learning, sitting at the feet of a man and learning?
That's very interesting. So if anybody is just tuning in now, you're listening to Muffin Talk with Beate. This program is brought to you by the Mercy Spirituality Center in Ipsum. If you miss any of our programs, please check out www.planetaudio.org/muffintalk or visit our website or Facebook page at Engaka Waiora Mercy Spirituality Center. My guest today is Brother Kieran Finn, and we're talking about the women in the Bible. And Brother Kieran, you were just mentioning the gospel according to Luke is sometimes called the gospel of the women. Is that true? Do you agree with it?
I'm moving in my thinking, because following the course of historical criticism, that it looked good at the start. Questions were raised about, well, what do the women do? They accompany Jesus. They provide for him out of their means. They're women with money to finance the mission. And this is not only found in the Gospel of Luke, it's found in the Acts of the Apostles as well. So you start to ask yourself the question, well, what are these women there for? Do we ever see them carrying out prophetic roles? Although, let's face it, Mary and Elizabeth certainly are prophetic figures.
That's Mary, the mother of
Mary, the mother of Jesus. Very strong. And but then when you come to the end of the gospel, and the women are given the Easter message, they are not believed. And I think the sort of reinterpretation of the negative portrayal.
So there's no woman who's begging for her daughter, and.
And what about, no, they're begging for the son. What about this beautiful story of the widow of Nain? And I like that story because, you know, I think we've got to be fair to the gospel and see what are the positives. And I think that that's a critical question. And certainly when Jesus sees that widow, I like the Greek word, esplagmesthai, his stomach turned over at her plight because she was left alone in this world. And he gives the son back to his mother, restoring his life. So, yes, there are some beautiful positive pieces there. And I think that this is a gospel that works through time periods. I mean, when you begin with the time of the Old Testament, those beautiful figures, Zechariah and Elizabeth, are the best that the Old Testament could give. And with John the Baptist exiting the scene, the period of the Old Testament finishes. And then we have the period of the New Testament. And in this period of the New Testament, the men play the predominant role. Because in the Gospel of Luke, Luke's preparing to complete the story in the third part of the story of the church. And what role are women going to play in that Jewish world? So
is that the story of Zechariah and Elizabeth?
Yes.
Does that occur in the other Gospels?
No, because the thing about the infancy narratives of Matthew and Luke are that they are so very different. After all, the Annunciation to Joseph was in Matthew. The Annunciation to Mary is in Luke. After all, Matthew's a Jewish Gospel. Here we have the potential for a new vision in a new world because we're dealing with the Gentile world. So, yes, there are other critical aspects of this gospel that need to be looked at carefully. If Luke was around, I'd have two questions to ask him. I would like to know about the story of Mary and Martha, a beautiful story, and then
Can you just summarize it?
Yes, yes. It's the story when Jesus comes for a meal. And, of course, the wonderful thing about this gospel is this theme of hospitality and having meals. And, you know, we have 10 meals in this gospel. It's built around meals, and Jesus seems to be eating all over the place. But then when he comes to the house, of course, you have Martha so busy getting everything ready for the food for the meal and so on, and you have Mary sitting at the feet of Jesus. Now, we could say, oh, look, Jesus is advocating women can learn. So that's a positive you can bring out, learn them. But we don't see the proclamation of it. We don't see women proclaiming the gospel. They're supporting the men who proclaim it. And there's where you get this element of ambiguity. What is the gospel trying to do? Is it throwing a historical challenge at us? I like that thought. And I'll tell you why I like it, because the Australian bishops have just put out a document after all the tragic history of abuse that country has suffered and the Royal Commission. And the bishops have now said, as a major recommendation, accelerating the inclusion of women in senior decision-making bodies. Accelerating it and senior decision-making bodies. Now, Mary and Martha, is this gospel pitting one sister against the other? And we hear this translation, Mary has chosen the better part. Now, I was once told about the languages involved in the Bible. If I stood up someone who was 6'10" tall and someone who was 6'8", I can't say one is bigger than the other. I have to say A is big and B is short. You can't say good, better, best. There's no middle form. So what are we doing translating? She's chosen the better part. Some translations now have got the point. Semitic language. You can, look, when Jesus says that you must love God and hate your parents, oh, come on. That's not what he meant. But there's no comparative form. So he can't say A is better than B, or you must love God more than you love your parents. So there's your problem. So here we have, is Jesus saying that, yes, Mary has chosen the good part, a good part. And that story has been one I would love to know. What do you mean, Luke? And the other thing I would like to know is, why did Luke leave out that wonderful story of the woman that anoints Jesus for his burial? Remember the alabaster jar and so on? We heard that in Mark and Matthew. We didn't hear it in Luke. But remember, that was at the home of Simon the leper. But what Luke does is he tells us a story about Simon the Pharisee and the sinner who comes in to anoint Jesus with an alabaster bar at a jar at the house of Simon the Pharisee. Is it the same story? Is it a completely different story? And it's in a completely different part of the gospel. So yes, those things I would say, well, they make me feel uneasy, but there are so many positives in Luke that have to be looked at. The extension of hospitality, that's a very beautiful theme in this gospel. Peter's mother-in-law, now we've heard that story twice. Now here, she has a high fever. Jesus stood over her and rebuked the fever. He didn't take her by the hand. He exorcised the demon of sickness that was there. You see now, another way of telling that story, but in a different way. So, yes, we've got these questions that emerge about this gospel.
You also mentioned that many women were not named, but in other gospels, there are also many women who are not named.
That's right.
So
and that's
what
being
makes
fair
it
to Luke.
Different?
That's being fair to Luke, yes, because we're dealing with this cultural world, and women have a different set of tasks to perform in life. And I think, you know, with the average age and the short lives of so many, those tasks are complementary tasks. And that's sort of defined and lived with. And I think, again, we have to raise the question of the culture that produced this gospel. And it's a really complex one because you have the Jewish world and you have the Roman world that's so strong. You have the inheritance of the classical Greek and Athenian world, the Macedonian and the Hellenistic world. So there are all these cultural influences coming in. And the world that Paul thought the world was going to end in his lifetime. And there was, in Paul, you find women carrying out significant roles, head of households and so on. But in this gospel, 15 to 20 years pass, and you get to the mid-80s when the Gospel of Luke is written. Now, I always like to compare the Gospel of Luke with the pastoral epistles, which Paul, the majority of scholarship says Paul did not write the pastoral letters. They too belong to the 80s and 90s. And that's where you have those lines like, I permit no woman to have authority over a man. If you have any questions to ask, ask your husbands when you get home, because Eve was deceived by the serpent and Adam was not. Now, I don't think that's quite the Genesis story at all. But you start to appreciate that there's something different in this world. And Luke is writing in a similar kind of a context. So while I can find excuses for some of these things, I think we've got to look very carefully and to look beyond that world and
Kieran, the other question, sorry, the other question, what I was thinking of is during all these sessions, now we have reached almost the end of our series.
Yes.
We've had a lot of powerful women, a lot of women who were very important, and a lot of foreigners.
Yes.
What about this aspect in Luke?
Oh, well, I think you've raised a really important question here, because something happens to a character like Mary Magdalene. I think Luke would change the structure of his gospel if he knew what we had done. Now, let me give you chapter 8, verses 1 to 3. Soon afterwards, Jesus went through cities and villages, proclaiming and bringing the good news of the kingdom of God. And the 12 were with him, as well as some women who had been cured of evil spirits and infirmities. Mary called Magdalene, now that's interesting, a woman who's named after a place, not after her relationship with a man, from whom 7 demons had gone out. Now, for goodness sake, all that means is that woman was very ill. It's got nothing to do with moral behavior. Cured of evil spirits and infirmities, yes, 7 demons, and Joanna, the wife of Herod's steward, Chusa. Now, she must have had a bit of money if she's the wife of the steward of Herod. And Susanna, and many others who provided for them out of their resources. You see that? Out of their resources? Their wealth. And these women accompany Jesus and the disciples and are the objects, the recipients of his healing. Now, what happens, apart from the ministry of these women, is that in the very next text, we have the story of the sinful woman who broke into the party and washed Jesus' feet with her tears, dried them with her hair, and carries this alabaster jar of ointment. Now, the fact that that follows this story, this piece, 8:1-3, it was Pope Gregory in the 6th century who conflated all these women and said, oh, it's Mary Magdalene is this woman, the sinful woman. And from this, we have this terrible, honestly, I think if she came back today, she's to sue us for defamation of character. And Mary portrayed as a prostitute. And I would certainly like to make the point that Pope Francis made it very clear in 2017. A document came out from the Vatican saying that Mary Magdalene is not to be called a prostitute, and she is to be recognized and given the title that the third early church gave to her. She is the apostle to the apostle. But now you can see where this came from with the conflation of 8:1-3 that introduces the women that accompany Jesus with the sinful woman who comes in and anoints Jesus. Oh, sorry, she doesn't anoint him, she washes his feet. And what I love about that story, and this takes us into a vitally positive aspect of Luke, is that Jesus says she has been forgiven her sins because she has loved much. And I think that there's a really important pastoral line there. Jesus doesn't forgive her sins there. Her sins have been forgiven because of the great love. And just last week, we buried a wonderful Jesuit who had been superior general of the Jesuits, Father Adolfo Nicholas. And Adolfo, when he was teaching us sacraments at the EAPI, he defined reconciliation as a celebration of a forgiveness you've already received. And this is what this gospel is showing us there. She's already been forgiven. Jesus acknowledges that forgiveness. And I really wish our sacrament of reconciliation could come alive if we celebrated the forgiveness that God has already given us. And we were greeted by a confessor who said, I just want to let you know, I want to share with you and celebrate with you that we're both forgiven sinners.
Maybe we should call the gospel of forgiveness and of healing.
Well, how many forgivenesses is there? This is the gospel of great forgiveness, the forgiveness of the repentant thief on the cross, the story of the prodigal son that shaped our appreciation of God. This is magnificent on the topic of forgiveness. There are so many. Zacchaeus come down from the tree and salvation comes to this house because he's forgiven. This gospel is just permeated with forgiveness.
But it can also be that in the areas where he was, where the gospel was taught, Luke's gospel, that yes. People had a culture where there was no forgiveness but revenge, and maybe he wanted to say, I'm preaching the good news. We have been forgiven. We don't have to go and walk over hot stones and see if God is punishing us. Maybe he has this intention because of his target group.
But Yes, I think you've got a point there that it's a society where the type of God that was believed in was a vengeful God that had to be placated. I well remember the experience in the EAPI of going to, in the north, in the Philippines, to a place called Bontoc. And there, they were so frightened. If a tree fell down, the gods had to be appeased. So therefore, all of them would come out back from their work, including the Christians, because a pig had to be offered. And the Christians were looking after the pig in their pit rather than have their pig being taken to be sacrificed to appease the gods. So, yes, God is not a God to be having to be appeased. God is a God who loves each one of us enormously.
And I think that's what Luke might have wanted to bring yes. across.
And
that's
know what?
Quite special.
God loved men and women equally.
Yes.
But then that's it. I mean, I think that out of this, the fact that Luke can tell these stories and the prophetic dimension that is so strong in chapters 1 and 2, and then finally in the last two chapters at the end of the gospel, and the women were not believed. It was an idle tale. And even on the road to Emmaus, you have
We have to remember that not believed doesn't mean that they were wrong.
No, they were right. And that's a great message. That's the positives that redeem this, you know, any sort of suspicion with regard to what's going on in this gospel.
Yeah.
Times, cultures change, and we have no right to be using the same excuses. But look, let's face it. We've got this challenge of Black Lives Matter, but we've got this whole culture change as well. What is the attitude in these different cultures that men have towards women? How can these cultures, can they accept a woman as a teacher, a woman as a minister of the word? I mean, this is where the gospel is challenging us. Do these things have to continue?
Well, I think, Brother Kieran, we are going to go a little bit in depth then on Wednesday.
Wonderful.
And that's also the time when any other people who are participating in your presentation, they have the chance to ask you questions as I can ask you at the moment. Thank you very much for this interview. And so what else is coming up at the Spirituality Center? Well, I am happy that we are now in level one. So we have opened for room hire. But regarding our sessions, everything that we have planned for June is going to be on Zoom. And so, for example, Brother Kieran Fenn, he's continuing with the gospel according to Luke next Wednesday, 17th of June, 10 a.m. And then we'll have on the 16th of June, we'll have Dr. Chris Longhurst, who will lead us behind the scenes of Vatican art and architecture. And that's a webinar from 7 to 9 p.m. But then again, tomorrow we'll have Eamon Butler, who is going to facilitate an online retreat from 11 to 4 p.m. The topic of the retreat is Who Am I? Reflecting on Our Identity in God. And if you would like to know any other information about the center and what is coming up, what we are planning, please have a look at our website at www.mercyspiritualitycenter.org.nz or send us an email at info@mercyspiritualitycenter.org.nz. Thank you very much, Brother Karen, and looking forward to hearing more on Wednesday. All the best.
Thank you.